Well, I just wanted to start to thank you very much for having us present our course. This is the first time that we've presented this course publicly, outside of course, the students themselves. And it's the second time I'm training this service dog, Samba, if you can see. It's his second time in a presentation. So if there are any dog lovers out there, and if he starts whimpering, if you want to raise your hand, I would be most grateful. So come So basically, we started this course back in 2009, and it was really related to an increasing demand for global health training. So this past summer has been the fifth year. It's a summer program, and as part of this broader global health delivery intensive 3.5-week session in July, where people come from all over the world to participate in this summer program. And really, there's an increasing demand, not only from our international colleagues, but also in the US, in terms of how do we advance our global health objectives. It's kind of like the buzzword, global health, but in a way, the reality is that we're talking about disparities or inequities in health outcomes, which is really the key issue. So in terms of global health, you know, domestically, we're really talking also about issues of inequities. So basically, what we wanted our students to come forward and learn about epidemiology and biostatistics in an integrated way, and also think about how do we use these tools to improve our health program performance, but also to develop strategies to reduce the burden of really diseases that affect those living in resource-limited settings. So this is, we know, for example, there are so many different obstacles to providing and advancing what we know to be effective strategies for, such as all of the findings from the Framingham Heart Study. How do we, with the increasing epidemics of obesity and diabetes, how do we advance that knowledge and that information to more resource-limited settings? So it's the idea of, in a way, transfer of our information to more resource-limited settings. So we use the textbook by Ashenkron and Siege, Essentials of Epidemiology and Public Health, because one, it was referred to me by my mentor, so that helps. And the other issue is that what we really liked about this text is that it gave you the standard definition of epidemiology, distribution and determinants of disease frequency in human populations, but it adds this dimension of the application of this knowledge to control health problems. So I think that the key issue here for our global health colleagues, you know, is how do we apply these methods to try to improve, you know, the clinic population I'm serving or the public health, the broader community or catchment area that we're serving. So this application is really what their goal is and also what our goal is as well. So we integrated biostatistics because we really did want them to walk away. Again, it's 3.5 weeks. The course met daily for 2 hours. It really is, you know, an intensive 3.5 weeks for them. But we really wanted to also provide introductory biostatistics because this, in effect, would allow them to have a better handle on, say, reviewing the, you know, the published literature and medical and public health literature. And so that's really what we were hoping they could walk away with. So our course objectives, and I'll try to go through these quickly and then kind of move on to more of the substance of the course, is really to look at the role of epidemiology and biostatistics in global health to make sure that the students really had the basic principles of epidemiology, because this course essentially was intended and crafted to fulfill an introductory epidemiology course requirement at the Harvard School of Public Health. So basically, it was crafted with that in mind, and so we wanted to make sure those basic principles were taught. But then, in addition to sort of attaining this basic knowledge, how do we then apply this to really analyze or focus on what the medical and public health literature is out there? We also wanted to focus on what really were the research, you know, what's the role of research in program design and in policy? So oftentimes we have mid-level career colleagues who come to the course, and oftentimes they're either involved with policy or program development, and they haven't really had formal exposure to epidemiology. And so this is really interesting for them, because often in policy arenas, it's a lot of back and forth in terms of who has a stronger opinion about certain strategies. And this allows for an open discussion about, well, what is the empirical information available for a given question? Say, how do you roll out bed nets to reduce the incidence of malaria in a given population? So this type of, you know, people have opinions about that, but the idea behind the course is to, you know, enhance people's analytical skills so they can look to the medical and public health literature to look beyond sort of the opinions that are being shared at the table. They also have some basic exposure to STATA. It's really a very introductory level, so we encourage them to have this exposure in order to, if they're interested in expanding their public health training after the 3.5 weeks, this gives them that initial exposure. And aside from that, really the goal is to work with the students. We want them, the 3.5 weeks, many of them are mid-level career professionals. We want them to realize it's a really sound investment of their time. So we want them to really walk away with stronger analytical skills. So we start the course, and I'm going to start focus first on the content of the course, but I really want to kind of shift more to the process and how we do this. And in terms of, you know, I know that there may be some time afterwards for discussion questions. We would also like feedback if people have ideas about how we might be able to approach things differently. You know, we're very open to that, because it's still only a 5-year. It's still in its early period, early phase, so we're very much looking into like getting feedback. So we focus on the Millennium Development Goals partly because that's where a lot of the policy people and program people that come to our program, they're interested in advancing those goals. So we try to break down the basic indicators. How are these indicators constructed? What are our basic epidemiologic measures of disease frequency, like prevalence, cumulative incidence, incidence rate, and then how does that relate to these MDG indicators? So one example is under 5 child mortality rate, and what's interesting about this metric is that it's really the number in a given country of under 5 child deaths divided by the number of live births in that given year. So what we try to do is say, okay, this is an indicator that's often used, but it actually doesn't map onto our standard measures of disease frequency that we use in epidemiology, and we discuss the strengths and limitations of using this metric. One of the strengths clearly is the fact that it does it's readily accessible. If you have birth records and death records in a given country, it's readily accessible information. The problem is that it's not a true rate, even though people call it a rate, and that's where we try to break it down in preparation for the other aspects of the course. We also try, in this example, not just learning about the metrics, but also one key motivator for the class is really how do we, yes, the focus is on disparities, but how do we reduce these disparities? Why are we here? And I think this is a dramatic example where you have, you know, the quote-unquote industrialized countries have a very low under 5 child mortality rate compared to the quote-unquote least developed countries. And this disparity, you know, as of 2009, basically is unconscionable. I mean, we have to think about strategies to address this huge gap, and that really is the premise of the course. So that's why in the introduction, so even, for example, case control studies, we used a study from Haiti, for example, that I've had the opportunity to do work, publish and with our colleagues in Haiti on studies that we've done there. But this is a young gentleman who, or a young boy, who actually recovered quite dramatically from extrapulmonary tuberculosis. And the idea is that, okay, what are the factors here? Well, first of all, TB here could have been prevented. Secondary prevention, it advanced to extrapulmonary TB. Had he been treated earlier for your standard classic TB, he wouldn't have progressed to this point. But yet, the third aspect is, yet even, I guess you can call it tertiary prevention, is actually effective treatment. So here in this case, we're looking at an effective health program, but how do we go ahead and think about these disparities and sort of the different levels of prevention and treatment to prevent this young boy from dying? So essentially what we do is then we take the students through the different study designs. So we try to then also go through it in terms of practical application. If we're looking at experimental experimental designs, how do we validly implement these designs? What does it mean to have a randomized placebo-controlled trial? What are the facets of that? But also thinking in terms of the policy implications or even just the ethical aspects is really when we're looking at global health contexts where people, A, might not have as you know, basically even literacy on clinical trials in the U.S. is limited, I think, in terms of why reaching out to high school students is very important. But if you're dealing with a population where only 50% of the population is only 50% is literate, then you're really dealing with a whole other level of understanding of what a clinical trial is. And so the important issues are relating to informed consent, making sure people are aware of what they're getting involved with, making sure they know that what they're receiving is not just a treatment, even though some of them will be receiving placebo. I think that these are all ethical considerations. We use this example for some of you who are aware of the prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV literature. This was a critical study back in 2000 where they actually published findings from an effective regimen to reduce the prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV that was less than $500 per case, which was very dramatic at the time because it did increase tremendously access to PMTCT at that point in time. What's interesting about this trial is that we had it back in 1994 found in the U.S. essentially strategies to, with AZT, both orally and through injectables, to reduce the risk substantially. What's interesting here is that they actually don't include, you know, essentially they're trying to look for a more cost-effective measure of how to do this. So,
just having fun.
It's okay. A more cost-effective way of dealing with this. So you think, well, ethically, this is really questionable with all due respect to the authors. On the other hand, what the implications were, we can look at this in hindsight historically and say this study had a dramatic impact and a lot of women, a lot of babies essentially survived because of this study. So it's really interesting to think, well, if you look at the prior to the study, the idea of equipoise really wasn't in the balance because we did have an effective regimen. And they did use a placebo, and this is an example. Their quote-unquote placebo was a regimen. Sorry about that. It was a regimen, but that was a regimen that did involve medication. However, it was a very low dose of AZT at the time. We also look at observational studies in terms of looking at valid study design and also the public health implications. So one interesting example is colleagues Mitnick and Al had published a number of years ago a study on extensively drug-resistant TB. And at the time, people essentially were saying, well, this is really not treatable. It's so advanced, they've kind of burned out all the drugs that we typically use. And so it's really not treatable. And so essentially, what we have here is an example where these authors compared extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis with multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis resistance to two drugs, and they found that results or outcomes, treatment outcomes, were fairly comparable. So what we do is we then not only discuss their study design. What's interesting is this is a retrospective study, but they use for exposed and unexposed groups different, like, for example, XDR versus MDR, and then they followed clinical outcomes over time. So their exposed and unexposed groups are actually different levels of disease. So essentially, this was an example where we looked at not only how did they design their study, but also looked at what were the policy implications at the time. And the policy implication was, yes, this is a treatable condition. And so people didn't just give up on these patients. Since I only have a couple more minutes, I want to shift really more to the process. Again, with case control studies, the same issue, not only looking at interpretation of findings, but also looking at the practical application. I'm going to move ahead on the process piece of it, because this is really the part that we felt as a teaching team was really exciting, where we looked at different strategies. And one thing that we found, was particularly useful was this alternating didactic and small group work. But what we did, and that's often used, but what we did do was we provided a fairly brief lecture, perhaps a half an hour, and then we would shift to people breaking up into small groups and working on an exercise that actually directly was related to the lecture. And as students became sort of used to this teaching method, we would prime them at the beginning. We would say, okay, really focus here. It's an 8:30 class, so people are still sort of sleeping with their coffee. And so we say, this is really important because by, you know, understanding what we're talking about in lecture, you're going to actually apply this in half an hour. So people were more sort of, you can see people were more engaged, and oftentimes when it's a lecture, people are more sort of passive, so to speak, and people did ask questions. We also encouraged that. So it was definitely more of a feedback in terms of the interaction. The groups we created were diverse. So for example, what we tried to do is count 1 through 6, for example, because we didn't want people sitting next to each other to be in the same group, because then this would allow for a greater diversity in discussion. We also kept the groups small, perhaps like 4 to 6 people, so that people, particularly shy people or people who are less likely to participate, also have a chance to speak up. And also the TAs and myself, we would circulate and see essentially what the groups were at, you know, how they were progressing. We reconvened the groups in about 20 minutes. But what was interesting in this is that oftentimes, in terms of process, people have a tendency to talk to the instructor. They say, okay, we reported this, and they talk to the instructor. But what we try to do is try to engage it so that they're actually talking to one another. And then, of course, if they are starting to get a little really off track in terms of concepts or methods, we do try to kind of reel them back in. But basically, to a large extent, they get to a point where they're really teaching one another, which is far more powerful than, say, just a lecture happening in epidemiology. So this is our 2010 cohort. You can see here people are, you know, from a lot of our students are from Canada. A lot of our students are from different countries, India, Pakistan, Zimbabwe, Uganda. We had a really, and also a lot of local residents, in the area, in the Boston area, at the local hospitals. We had in-class exercises where, for the Lull and Mott study, we actually had them calculating in class. Okay, a 2x2 table, like we would show the 2x2 table and then immediately have them apply it. So then they realized, actually, wait, is it the disease on this side or the exposure on this side? So they thought that, well, perhaps listening, oh, yeah, I understand that. But epidemiology is interesting in that you think, oh, yeah, it's easy, I understand it. And then when you try to apply it, you think, oh, okay, actually, this is a little more complicated than I thought. So this is the kind of worksheet that we shared with them. And then we would give them basically these templates from the... So I realize we're running out of time. We use this framework and then the final exam, we actually had them, this is, if you look back, the framework essentially is the framework provided by Ashenkron and Siege, how to evaluate an article. What we did for the take home is we gave them 2 different articles on the same research question that gave differing results. And we had them individually, not in groups, really break that down. And that helped them to kind of synthesize it at the end. Sorry about that. I've gone a little bit.
All right, well, thank you very much.